各位听众朋友们，大家好，欢迎听到 The Bilateral, the flagship podcast from the Canada-China Business Council. I'm Sarah Koutoulakos, CCBC's Executive Director, and my co-host is Noah Fraser, our Managing Director in Beijing. 希望您会喜欢这个播客。The Bilateral is designed to shed light on issues of interest to the Canada-China business community, to highlight some of the interesting work CCBC's members are doing, and to help our Canadian audience better understand what is happening in China today from a business perspective. Today's episode is the next in our Business Excellence Awards series, featuring Canada Goose, which won the Gold Award in the Outstanding Member category in 2020. We began the Canada-China Business Excellence Awards in 2008 as a way to celebrate the success of organizations that are doing business between Canada and China. Every 2 years, CCBC presents these awards to organizations that have played an innovative and leading role in expanding and nurturing bilateral business relationships. We will highlight the winners in our three categories: Outstanding Member, Exceptional SME, and Education Excellence. We hope that the stories of our award winners provide inspiration and help to encourage more successful trade and investment between Canada and China. The CCBC is grateful to SnapPay for its support of the awards initiative. We were fortunate to feature Canada Goose CEO Danny Rees at CCBC's AGM Business Forum on October 28, 2021. That session kicked off with a Canada Goose video called Human Nature, and a bit of music from it is in this podcast. You can watch that brief video via the link in the show notes. Danny is in conversation with the Honorable Scott Bryson. Scott is a vice chair on the CCBC board and currently serves as vice chair investment and corporate banking with BMO Capital Markets. Scott is a whole lot smarter and funnier than either me or Noah. Do listen for the puns. So we're going to let him lead on this one. Here is Danny and Scott's Fireside Chat.
Welcome. Welcome to our session today on Canada-China and the deepening commercial relationships during a challenging time. We could not have a better person to tell us how to do that than Danny Rees of Canada Goose, who has built a powerhouse in China during a very tough time. And I'm thrilled, Danny, to be with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm as thrilled as you are, and this is going to be a fun talk.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And before we get into the questions, there's a video that is pretty inspiring in terms of that people-to-people relationship that has been so pivotal in your extraordinary success. So why don't we take a moment, watch that video, and then I'll be right back at you. But now, Danny, just from that video, can you give us some insight as to that initiative, Human Nature, and the and what it accomplishes and what it does to strengthen those people-to-people ties that are so important to what you've accomplished?
Yeah, I think the people-to-people relationship is really important. You know, I know that coming into China, we had a very relatively high brand awareness in China. I think that, you know, to me, the activation was the ultimate representation of our purpose-built platform, Human Nature. And that's the name Human Base, hence the name Human Nature Basecamp Experience. Basecamp's important because those are our fans, right? Those are people who subscribe to be part of our part of our community. And Human Nature for us really unites sustainability with our values-based initiatives, underscores our purpose to keep the planet cold and to keep the people on it warm. So it's actually embedded across every aspect of our operations, and it really drives everything we do, including all of our CSR initiatives, our product design, our culture. And you know, we work within and we work for our communities in the arts and in entertainment areas. So this is that film was about an event which took place over 3 days. It included hiking and glamping. There's an outdoor film experience that we call Out There Cinema, which we've been running for a number of years now in many places. And it was a nod to our, you know, decades-long relationship with the film and entertainment industry around the world. It included a seminar about wildlife protection and photography, There were meals that were immersed in the great outdoors. And really, this is a celebration of what Canada Goose inspires and enables. That to be human is also a part of being nature. And when you're surrounded by nature, you can better embrace yourself. You know, it also demonstrated our focus on sustainability and our commitment to the planet. And I think what's really important about it is that it's a really strong example as how, you know, we can localize the brand in China, how we can take, you know, something like a global platform and make it, you know, and have it viewed through the lens of the Chinese consumer. And that's a way not only to remain authentic and authentically Canadian in a Chinese environment, but also a way to build brand awareness within China.
Yeah, well, it's remarkable. It strikes me that you're really walking the walk in a very authentic way, and that really sets you apart. December 2018, you opened your first store in China. Now, for some time, there had been some significant demand in China for your products and for Canada Goose, which is great. And on December 1st, 2018, Madam Meng got arrested in Vancouver, and Canada-China relationships went into sub-zero temperatures pretty quickly. Of course, Canada Goose is used to sub-zero temperatures, but it is a remarkable achievement that in the last 3 years you achieved this success. And I got a question for you. Now, how did Canada Goose succeed in China over the last 3 years during a period when Canada was getting goosed?
You know, I think that what's important is there are different kinds of relationships. And I think it's important to note I break it down to three different sectors. And I think it's really important to do that. And I think that, you know, I referred to it briefly earlier, the people-to-people relationship. And I think that's important. I think Canadian people and Chinese people, we really get along well. There's lots of Canadians in China and Hong Kong and all parts of China. And there's lots of Chinese people in Canada as well. And we were a large Chinese population, and we all cohabitate and get along really well, and that's really important. And I believe that the Chinese consumers and Chinese people really like Canada Goose. I can also say, aside from China, just putting China aside for one quick second, like the Canadian brand is very strong. It's been strong all over the world, and I've spent 20 plus years traveling the world building this brand, and people really care about Canada, and it really resonates with people. And it's no different in China. I think that Canada is an aspirational country, and so on a people level, I think that I think that is the reason why we were able to continue to be so strong, because you know people love Canada. I mean, I have a story about that. If you let me go off topic for a second.
No, that's very much on topic. And
no, it's not off topic, but it's kind of off script.
No, you've got a great message, and it has the advantage of being the truth. So please. Well,
it's an off script message for sure, but it's actually relevant to the CCBC. And, when I was invited to join an event with Prime Minister Chrétien, and it was myself and Chrétien and a few other business leaders and Chinese ambassadors to various countries, and each of them had held different roles over the years in different portfolios in different countries. And you know, there were a lot of political things exchanged over the course of the I think it was a lunch that we had, I contributed my part to that, but we won't get into that. But after that was over, and everybody separated, the Chinese contingent was going down an elevator, one elevator, and the Canadian contingent stayed upstairs. So I went in down with the Chinese contingent and that delegation, and all they were talking to me about was our Canada Goose jackets and how much they like our Canada Goose jackets, and which ones they have, and what store opening they went to, and what one they're going to get next. And it was all about the product and all about how much they loved it. So you know, to me, that like what I took from that was that, people love the Canada Goose brand and they love Canada in China. You know, I'm very excited about the future for Canada Goose in China.
Well, thank you, because I actually think that Canada Goose during a tough time has helped maintain relations that are very important. What would be your advice today to businesses looking to, enter into the China market, Canadian businesses, and grow there? But also, I guess, more directly, what would be your advice to, we have a new foreign minister now, and Melanie Joly, and a new cabinet. What would be your advice to them in terms of rebooting the Canada-China relationship and leading with business and business understands some of the dynamics, you do understand it better than anybody. What would be your advice?
Well, let's try to break that down into a couple into the two parts of business and the government. You know, I try not to advise government too much. I think that it's government's role to set policy and to find better ways to trade with foreign countries. You know, I happen to know China is our second largest trading partner, and I think that at some point in the future, it's possible to be our largest trading partner. Who knows? So I think it does remain important that we are able to trade with them, and I think having a set of ground rules that both sides can agree upon and a framework for that would be a very useful thing. And I expect that that's pretty common sense, and I would hope that the government would agree with that. And I imagine that they would, and you know how they go about that is up to them, and that's why they're in government and we're in business. I think that from a business side, the way we went into China, we took our time. We really took our time to put in place a strategic plan. It took us a year, maybe more than a year, maybe 2 years actually, to put together this plan of how we were going to do it. We researched the market very much in depth. We did market research. I went there. I interviewed different CEOs that ran different business units in China. We looked at all the different ways we could enter the market, and we made our choices and we made our selections over time. And then we implemented the strategic plan. And because we did it in a methodical, thought out way, it was not knee jerk. It wasn't, let's just go try and sell some stuff. It was in a very thoughtful way. It has turned out to be very successful. And we did choose to enter China differently than we had other markets. We decided that we were going to enter as a direct-to-consumer brand first and own the marketplace. Typically, we'd have a distributor, and they would sell mostly the wholesale, and then we would go in and open e-commerce, sometimes buy back the distribution, and then open stores. This time, we went in direct. We thought it was very important, and I think this piece of advice, This is the next piece, is very important. We decided to run China from China, right? We felt that we needed local Chinese people to run our operations in China because they understand China better than anybody else. And I think that was a really important decision that we made. And this team that we hired and the staff that we hired, they've done a phenomenal job. They are really passionate about what they do, and they're very good at what they do. And of course, they understand, the local market and things that we might not understand about it, even if we think we do, we probably don't. And so, running China from China was a very central part of that strategy. And my advice would definitely be to do that, regardless.
So having the right local partners from the beginning,
partners and staff.
It's part. That's what. Yes. Now. Look, one of the concerns that brands have sometimes or express are issues around knockoffs and issues around intellectual property and brand in China. That's something I hear from people as they chart out plans for expansion into China. You have a brand based on authenticity. The stakes are very high for you to protect that. How do you thread that needle in China? Because you seem to be doing it quite nicely.
I think that I like your analogy with the thread the needle thing. That was good.
Not bad. I should, with lines like that, I could have been in politics.
I thought you were. I'll tell you, intellectual property is certainly very important to us. And counterfeit product has been an issue that we've been dealing with for over a decade now, well over a decade. And we definitely address it in many ways. I certainly feel it's our responsibility to our customers to protect our brand and to make sure that you know, I think we're protecting on behalf of them. You know, at the end of the day, the consumer owns your brand. I think that's a branding lesson you learn early on. And I think that it's important that we protect it. And we protect it in many ways. We do it, you know, where people sell products. We do it where people make products. And so, you know, we address it by rating locations where they are selling or making fake products. We do it through border enforcement and through training border agents about how to detect fake goods or not. We do it by speaking directly to different countries, including Canada, but about policies around counterfeit products. Because, you know, unfortunately, what makes our job more challenging is that there is different policy in every country about counterfeit products. So some countries will seize goods at the border, some countries will put people in jail, and some countries will think it's not important enough. So, you know, I mean, that's part of the challenge that we face. But most importantly, I think education and making sure that our consumers understand that there are counterfeit goods, and that if they want to buy an authentic Canada Goose product, the best way to do that is to do that these days through us directly, as we sell most of our products direct to consumer. And by the end of this year, we expect to be around 70% direct to consumer globally. You know, and if not direct through us, then through an authorized distributor.
Yeah. So a question on where you see the future of retail in terms of bricks and mortar versus digital and direct to consumer, recognizing, you know, your direct to consumer business is very robust, but your wholesale business is still important. But where do you see this in the future?
So, you know, globally, our wholesale business is relatively large. In China, we're mostly direct to consumer. You know, I think that both digital and bricks and mortar have a very important role to play. They're different and complementary roles. You know, we are going to have 18 stores in China by the end of this year. Relatively speaking, 18 stores is not that many for a global brand like ours. You know, so there's definitely opportunity for us to continue to grow from a store footprint point of view. But we feel that they interact very nicely together. You know, people can go into a store and have a great experience and end up buying a product online, or vice versa. People could shop and browse online at any time of day or night, and then they could go into a store and they can make a purchase there. And so, you know, we feel that we want to provide our fans with the opportunity to shop whenever, however they want, and wherever they want. And I think that as we continue to do that, we also have the opportunity to continue to open more stores to provide more of those experiences. You know, many of those stores, I'll tell you, like, which is really, really kind of cool. A lot of those, like, I had this experience in Hong Kong. One of our Hong Kong stores, we have cold rooms which simulate extreme cold temperatures. And so people can go into these large vaults, which are freezing, like well below freezing, well below zero. And in some cases, you know, I've been in our Hong Kong store where people who live in Hong Kong actually experience sub-zero temperatures for the first time in their lives, right? So as an experiential brand, that is almost the penultimate experience that one can have. And it's certainly a very powerful one to demonstrate how functional our products are and how authentic they are and how much they actually work. And then you take Made in Canada on top of that. And that, you know, I think that makes for quite a unique experience.
Yeah, you could cut a deal if they really want that experience, and a plane ticket to Winnipeg or Ottawa in February, along with the Canada Goose coat, to give them that opportunity to experience it in the
home. Have to be some kind of contest, I suppose. Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you, you mentioned coming to Canada. When we opened our very first store, which is in Yorkdale in Toronto, I was there, and I remember meeting a gentleman from Hong Kong, and he had flown to Toronto just to attend the opening of our first ever retail store, which I must admit kind of blew my mind. I didn't expect that somebody would take a trip like that just to go to a store, but it was very flattering to hear that, and it was nice to meet and chat with that gentleman.
So Danny, you take data very seriously and data analytics. As a business, you are very, you know, aware of consumer directional and directional trends. But how much of your decision making on the really important decisions are guided by data versus instinct and gut. And I'd be interested in your thoughts because you are a person who has I think quite an intuitive sort of nature, and I think instinct is important to you. And how do you balance that? And do you see sometimes your gut telling you things different from what the data analytics are telling you?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think that one thing that is important to know about that question is that I think the role of each changes as a company gets bigger, for sure. You know, I think you're trying to analyze and come up with data for a company that's perhaps in a small to mid-sized category, you know, maybe is a bit overdoing it. You know, I mean, if I can imagine us as a very small company trying to come up with data analytics, I think that it's more important to just do the right thing and what feels like the right thing and to lean into to one's gut instincts. I think that, you know, today, you know, data and analytics is very important to us, no doubt. And, you know, certainly it's very available in today's environment. And so we can go online and we can see who's searching our websites, where they're coming from, what they're looking for, what pages they're looking at. And of course, it's important to know all that stuff. And that stuff is very readily available. So based on that, you know, we can make decisions, and that's important. Now, there are still opportunities to do things that are based on gut instincts. And I think that, you know, I think that comes down to having a real passion and enjoyment and love for what one does, what I do. And, you know, to have been able to come from where we came, which was a small, you know, $3 million company, mostly making private label products, to where we are today, you know, you have to be able to love what you do, and you have to be able to see things other people don't see in a way that they don't see them. And I still think that that's possible for us as well. I still think that, you know, this brand, as much as we've grown and we've become become an example of what's possible for business in Canada, I still think that there is so much more that we can be. And I'm excited about those things. And, you know, I think at this point, you know, intuition is important. I think also not being afraid of the future is important, and not being afraid to put your neck on the line really, really shoot for the stars. I think that's important as well. And I think it's important for Canada too. It's not very Canadian.
And thank you, by the way, for your commitment to manufacturing in Canada. And as you move now into the boot, and deepen your footstep, as it were, the market, Baffin is you got a very high quality product. I mean, similar to that which you joined in your family business, you had a product that is high performance authentically, and you build out from that. So how do you see the boot business, Canada Goose's new business, and China in the coming months and years?
I'm very, very excited about it to start with. It perhaps is the most exciting thing I think that we're doing this year is launching footwear, Canada Goose footwear, and it will be in fact, launching on Singles Day in China on 11/11, and I, you know, in addition to the rest of our collection, I think it'll do very well. I'm very excited to see how it does. You know, our journey to get to where we are now with regards to footwear has been a long one. I mean, it's been something I've been dreaming about for a long time. You know, our consumers have wanted it and asked for it because it makes sense from a product perspective. And you know, it's taken us 3 years to put a strategy together and to build a team to do it. And you know, you mentioned Baffin. Baffin is a Canadian company, and we bought them to learn about footwear manufacturing, to basically have a platform to grow from and to learn about footwear. I mean, footwear and apparel are two very different things. And you know, we wanted to make sure that we were successful, and so we wanted to know as much as we could about footwear. And from that, you know, and having Baffin as a platform, and Baffin, by the way, they still exist. They're obviously a separate brand. They're in a different price point than Canada Goose boots are going to be, dramatically different price point. And you know, they compete with different kinds of brands. And you know, I think that we Canada Goose, and with the experience that we've had over the last 25 or so years, we've been able to help them, and we're going to continue to be able to help them become the best version of themselves that they can possibly be, and compete with their peers. You know, what we're doing with Canada's footwear is a different thing, and we're really we're creating a new category. I mean, in the same way as we did with outerwear, we're creating a category of products that are luxury products that are priced in a luxury price point because the materials are so good, because these products are made in Italy and Romania and places that are not inexpensive to manufacture products, and in fact places that are renowned for footwear manufacturing, and they're functional and they're also stylish at the same time. And to be able to do that has not been done before, and just in the same way as creating a luxury apparel had not been done before either. And this is what we're striving to do with footwear. Super excited about it. And you know, the future is a lifestyle, global lifestyle brand from Canada, the likes of which there has never been one before. It is really exciting to be a part of it and to have arrived at this moment.
It's great. Now, you know, some people may wonder how you sell coats that are designed for sub-zero temperatures in China, and I think I direct them to South Beach or Miami, where they can watch all those Land Rovers driving around that never get off the road, but off road. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on that, because this is clearly, from a branding perspective, you've captured a market that is counterintuitive, and you understand that Canada brand, I think, better than just about anybody. But how do you know, I'd be interested in hearing how you look at that idea that would seem to people guided by conventional thinking would find this to be amazing that you're able to do this.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing up the Land Rover analogy. I actually like to talk about them a lot myself. And I think that, you know, I think Canada Goose is the Land Rover of clothing. I do. And I think that we, you know, I think, you know, people buy a Land Rover because they, you know, they take a Land Rover, you put it some leather on it, you put some wood grain trim, a chrome shifter, some nice fancy tires, and suddenly it becomes a car for the city. And as you point out, most people who buy one of those vehicles are not about to drive across the Sahara or the Gobi Desert or any of these remote and challenging terrains of the world. Yet they could if they wanted to. And I think with the Canada Goose jacket, it's the same thing. We make a best-in-class product that's built and designed and tested and used for decades in the coldest places on Earth. And people want to own things that are the best and want to own best-in-class products. And people also want to own, from our point of view, our downfill jackets were made in Canada, and people want to own it. We're a quintessentially Canadian brand, and people want to own a piece of Canada. So, you know, I think that that's very important. And I think, you know, another thing to add, I mean, you mentioned Miami, you know, we have some of our best markets are, you know, including Hong Kong, at least a few years ago, some of our best markets are not cold markets. Tokyo, for example, for years and still, you know, it almost never goes below zero. It almost never snows. Yeah, we sell a lot of jackets in Tokyo. So, you know, back to the being aspirational and, you know, wanting to buy best in class because the product you're buying is able to do something, even if you're never going to do that thing with that product. I think that's really important. People want to own real, authentic, functional things. And I don't think there's many brands in the world like us left anymore. And so I think that's why we resonate so well with consumers, regardless of the climate in which they live.
You know? Now probably the only thing worse than taking marketing advice from a politician would be taking marketing advice from an investment banker. But let me, you know, when am I going to be able to buy a Canada Goose Land Rover?
That'd be a great question. I think that would be best direct that Land Rover at this point, but we do not have a car development division at this time.
Maybe a Tesla.
But the two brands could go well together for sure. I should mention also, you know, I mean, you talk about the different markets in which we sell. You know, we don't just make heavyweight jackets. Like, obviously, we make the best and warmest jackets in the world, but we also make jackets that are, we have rainwear, we have windwear, we have knitwear, we have lightweight down jackets. We have a full assortment of outerwear, and now we have an assortment of sportswear, which is intended for a multitude of markets. So not only do we have the, you know, people can buy the warmest and best anywhere in the world, they can also buy things that are more utilitarian for where they live. And I think that's important, too.
Now look, protecting the a certain level of exclusivity in some ways with your brand is obviously important. But how do you as you become so ubiquitous and successful, how do you prevent the commoditization of your brand? And is and how important is that authenticity, being maniacally focused on protecting it? Is that part of how you intend on keeping that cachet?
Yeah, sure. Yes, it is. I mean, authenticity is everything, and it's very important that we make our downfield jackets in Canada. It's very important that we make any other products not made in Canada, that, you know, like our knitwear, for example, made in Italy, same as our footwear, that we make them not in low-cost environments, but in the best place to make those products so that they remain authentic. I think that's important. And, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, it's a general term, but I'd say, like, through proper brand management, which is hard to do, we are able to protect the exclusivity of our brand. That, you know, there are brands that are far larger than us that are deemed to be exclusive and hard to get and rare, and that are still considered to be luxury brands. I mean, Louis Vuitton, I believe, sells, you know, 20 something billion euros a year in products. And there's many other brands between us and them. And so I don't see any, you know, I think that as long as we continue to work with best in class partners and sell our products in best in class locations, I think that and manage our brand well, I think that we're going to continue to be able to be as successful as we have been so far. I think that on top of that, doing collaborations with important designers is very important. We recently, you know, just specifically to China, we recently launched a collection with Angel Chen. Angel Chen she's a global designer. She's based in Shanghai, and we launched this collection, I believe, 2 days ago. It's doing very well, and it resonates really well in China because Angel Chen is from Shanghai, but it also resonates very well outside of China. You know, and I think that doing collaborations of that nature, and we do many of those a year, it's important. I think it's important for the local market, and in the case of Angel Chen, very important for China. And I think that continuing to do collaborations and make products that are hard to come by, I think that that's going to continue to make our brand desirable and scarce. And I think that's important. It's important to always have more demand than supply. And we have always been able to maintain that balance very well.
That is super smart of you, in my opinion. I mean, Chinese are justifiably proud of what has been accomplished in recent decades in terms of moving the country forward. And to take a Chinese designer and to partner with you as part of your global efforts, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. But it also makes the point that they're not just there to buy things from the world. They're not just there to make stuff, low value stuff or something like that. The design element, to use a Chinese designer to do that, I think that's very. That's very unique, I would think.
Yeah, thank you. I think that I am unaware of any other apparel brands that are doing that in the way that we're doing that in China at the moment. And I think it's important, as you said, I think it's important that it goes both ways. I think it's important that we, you know, design in China for China, but I think it's also important that those very same designs get exported to the rest of the world as well. The Chinese designers and Chinese companies get that exposure outside of China as well. And I'm really happy that we're able to help do that and make it a symbiotic relationship.
You have some very smart social media as a company. And I'd be curious as to how to, you know, in China, given the limitations on some of these and the distinctive nature of social media in China, how have you been able to navigate that?
You know, social media is certainly very important today. Obviously, to your point, there's no question about it. And, we feel it's really important to engage with KOLs in China and with trend centers and image makers all around the world. The reason why that we, like, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on social media in China specifically, because I'm not. I think that, you know, I don't think any of us are. I think that that's why we decided that we needed to go hire and build our offices in China so that they can champion the growth and build in the build out of the Canada Goose brand in China, because China had to be run directly out of China. And so, you know, our marketing department has done a fantastic job in China, and continued to build on our brand awareness there, and the desire for our brand, both through the collaborations I've been talking about, and there will always be more to come on that, and also through our social media presence as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it speaks to one of your very first points of the local team actually, you know, having authority in terms of understanding and the authority to move forward is important, but to move that to a point where you have a Chinese designer for your products globally for some lines, I think that's pretty pretty terrific. In terms of the digital side, how do you see post COVID? How are you going to sort of turbocharge that in other markets? I mean, wholesale is very important, as you said. But are there other markets like China that you could get traction faster with direct to consumer? And how are you looking? How do you look at those markets and think of this is a market we can enter and direct to consumer could be very successful here? How do you pick those markets?
Well, you know, China today, I would say for us, is the most evolved market from a direct to consumer perspective. What percentage of our market is DTC? Other markets have definitely skewed over the years, and we've moved the needle to the right in terms of our DTC penetration. By the end of this year, we're going to have 40 stores around the world, which again is not a lot of stores when you compare us to many brands. We don't want to be like every brand. We're very strong online, and we feel it's important to be to work as hard as on our online presence as it is to work on our brick and mortar presence. And we only want to be and have stores in the best and most important and most influential cities in the world. And that's our objective. And, you know, we feel we have a lot of opportunity ahead of us to accomplish that. We do want to stop at that point and fulfill the rest with our e-commerce and omni-channel experience. You know, I think that we are in most markets today. You know, there are a few outliers that we've not fully penetrated, I would say. But overall, we are. You know, I'm very happy with the markets that we're in and the product categories that we continue to grow. As a premium lifestyle brand, luxury performance brand, we've really been able to create a new category that did not exist in the marketplace before. And, you know, even last year during the pandemic, not to say that it's entirely over yet, because it's not, but, you know, it's certainly better than it was then. And even then, with many stores closed, we had our best third and fourth quarters of all ever last year. And I mean, much of that was driven online around the world in every market. To the extent that stores were open in some places, they were only open to local consumers. And so, I'm very optimistic and I'm very positive about the future and our trajectory. And, I see only bright things for us, including in China.
And look, do you ever think of, you're obviously in the luxury goods business, and brand is really essential. Do you ever think of other sectors where you see, by gosh, Canada could be doing really well in China? I mean, people with egg tech, for instance, or clean. Do you ever look at some of those other spaces and see potential that perhaps is not recognized in terms of its scale at this time? Do you any thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, I don't really know about any individual other business categories specifically. I'm not educated enough on those businesses to know, you know, what the landscape for those businesses is like in China today. What I do know is that the Canadian brand, I'll come back to this discussion around the Canadian brand that we were having earlier. I mean, the Canadian brand is indeed very strong. We have people around the world really see Canada as an aspirational place, and our brand resonates very, very well with them on many fronts. And so, I've learned about that over over decades. And I think that many Canadian companies underestimate the value of being Canadian and of a Canadian brand, even so much to the point of I've seen companies that are Canadian pretend that they were American because they would think that companies or other companies around the world would rather do business with them because they're American. Now, you know, maybe that's changed in the last 4 years or so, who knows? But I think that being Canadian definitely has a lot of benefits to it. And I think the Canadian companies should really lean into being Canadian. I think it's a massive asset.
I could talk to Danny for hours and hours and listen, actually more importantly, listen to him, because at a time when we seek inspiration for the renewal of the people-to-people relationship between Canada and China and coming out of a dark period in terms of Canada-China relations, you are a shining example of what a genuine, authentic, focused approach can take in building and a remarkable people-to-people relationship when everything else was going sideways.
You know, I'm really happy that Canada Goose is a company can stand as an example for what is possible, not only in China, but around the world for a Canadian company to achieve. Certainly, Canada has it and has those capabilities within us to do those things. You know, I think everybody and all of us at Canada Goose, you know, we wake up every day. We're very passionate about what we do, and we wake up and we're trying to achieve things that people think we've already accomplished. That's just our mindset and our mentality. Maybe it's because we're Canadian, I'm not sure. But I'm happy that Canada Goose is a role model for other Canadian companies, and you know, to the extent that we're able to help and be a leader that others can follow in our footsteps. I think that the more Canadian success stories, the better. I'm a champion for Canada, and I certainly hope to see more success stories come out of Canada. And to the extent I can do more of these sorts of have these conversations with you, I think I'd be happy. I'm more than happy to be here, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Your grandfather was a Holocaust survivor and came to Canada and built a business against the odds, in a sense, of starting rebuilding a life and a business. And do you ever wonder about what he's thinking now as he looks at what you're doing and success? And do you ever ever take time in your frenetic schedule to just feel a sense of pride in what the founder of this of the original business, your grandfather, must feel about what's going on right now?
I think that if I were able to speak to my grandfather today, I think that him and I would have a very interesting conversation. I don't think he would have imagined this company being what it is today. Honestly, 25 years ago, I also did not imagine this company being what it is today. And I'm very proud of what we've done and all of the hard work that the entire Canada Goose team has put into helping us get to where we are today. I'm sure my grandfather would have something to say about that as well.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you for everything you've done, are doing, and will do to be a phenomenal, extraordinary ambassador for Canada, not just in China, but around the world. And, well done. Keep it up, and looking forward to seeing you.
Likewise, Scott. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the kind words, and I look forward to hanging out with you again sometime soon.
Keep an eye on your email and social channels as we bring you more content on the Canada-China business and investment relationship. More events and information are always available on ccbc.com and our WeChat account, so please give us a follow. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review to help more listeners find us. Thanks for listening, everyone. Fei Zhang Gan Xie.